That's the worst Christmas.
Hello, and welcome to episode 26 of If This Is a Podcast, Then What's Christmas? Wow, we got to half a year. I don't know if that's more or less than I was expecting when I started this thing off. Of course, most of the episodes are Dave Dye. So thanks a lot to him and to everyone else who has kindly contributed to the first 6 months of If This Is a Podcast and What's Christmas, including, obviously, today's guest, Chaka Sobhani, who is the Chief Creative Officer of Leo Burnett in London. I had a lovely chat with Chaka, and I never know if people who are listening to this have read the blog post beforehand or are just going in cold. But the whole point of me wanting to talk to Chaka was that she has a very different story to most people who go into advertising. In fact, I think, as I mentioned at some point in our chat, the usual route is advertising for a while until you do the thing you really wanted to do, whether that's acting or directing or writing or something else. And to actually go from the something else into advertising is not something that happens that often, or at least in sending someone right to the top of the business, which is where Chaka is now. So enjoy her unusual story. And she's a lovely person, enormously energetic, fantastically pleasant to talk to. There's a couple of points where my cat interrupts us. If you're wondering what's going on, my cat interrupted us. So with that all clarified, enjoy the chat. Great. Well, we could just get into it, because, I mean, I guess any conversation we would have would be part of the chat for the podcast. Are you aware of any of them?
I am, of course, and I have listened. And then, brilliantly, what I was going to do, I'd actually put half an hour before this so I could, like, get calm and get centered. And I literally just finished the review and run straight out of it going, I've kept it waiting for 10 minutes already.
It's fine. It's been doing the podcast has been one thing, but organizing them has been another.
What was the reason behind it?
I've been doing the blog for a long time, like about 12 years. And for some reason, I just sat straight up in bed and went, oh my God, I need to turn this into a podcast. And my wife went, yes, you do. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And I think part of it is it's nice to connect back to the UK properly. It's a good excuse to chat to friends of mine and people I've never met, but also are really interesting. Because I feel kind of detached, because even when I was in London, working at Media Arts Lab meant we weren't part of the scene, because we didn't pitch and we weren't really in campaign, and it was all quiet and confidential. Yeah. So having been like up to my eyeballs in the world of advertising for quite a long time, I then sort of detached from it. And I think this has been a really good opportunity, not only to get back, but I also felt like there isn't enough knowledge being passed on to people through whether they're the people who were great copywriters, art directors, or people who started great agencies, and I hope we're going to find out in your story, have taken maybe an unconventional route to the top of the business. I think they're all things that can inspire people and teach people that, hey, maybe you could do it this way, or maybe you could do it that way, or maybe you could, you know. So I worry that the passing on of the knowledge and experience isn't as solid and substantial as it could be.
Can I ask you a question? What do you put that down to? Do you just put that down to people not caring as much, or just people not taking the time to share it, so to speak?
Oh, I think there's a million, well, maybe not a million, but maybe a 50 answers to that. But I think there's a lot of things. There's ageism in advertising, which means that the people who could be passing on that knowledge are no longer at agencies as long as they perhaps used to be or could be. I think that if I'm being honest, I'm not sure the quality of advertising is the same as it used to be. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But it's also that people who want to actually be copywriters and actually write copy, or want to be art directors and actually art direct, isn't so much as the people who have ideas. And having ideas is enormously important, obviously, in advertising. Yeah. But I think the actual crafting and the execution, the bit that happens after you have the idea, is just as important, because you can mess up a great idea if you don't execute it well. And I wonder if the time, money, and resources that craft requires are as substantial and, you know, are as present as they used to be. That would be my question.
I love that. A really good essay question.
It is a good essay question. Dissertation, please answer in no less than 1,000 words. But yeah, I asked Patty for a sort of rundown of your bio, because I looked on your bio online and I found some certain things, but it's a little bit, there's a few gaps missing. And I think maybe the first gap would be where and why you started, whether because I couldn't tell if it was ITV or what happened before ITV. So.
Wouldn't it be amazing if at this point I could tell you like I was in the SAS or something?
Yes.
I was actually Black Ops for 6 years. And I just found it all too stressful. And then I decided to like a creativity. No, I'll give you the York Notes version. I won't give you the laboriously long question. I'm going to say this and then I'm going to rant on for ages, so you must stop me.
Okay.
I'm second generation immigrant, so there's always an interesting urgency to know a trade, know a profession, which, you know, I think any sort of child of a first generation immigrant kind of knows. So whether it's engineering, law, medicine, you know, those big chunky ones where you're guaranteed a job and a future.
Mm-hmm.
And my natural prediction was, unsurprisingly, towards all things creative, but there wasn't really the sort of the vocabulary or the knowledge or the understanding within my family of how you would go about that. And also there was a huge amount of fear around that, because one, we didn't have any knowledge about it, but also there was no experience of, oh, you can have a full and a fulfilling life and a successful life. So it's interesting, because then you've got to find out a load of shit by yourself. And it was I mean, I grew up with computers, I could be wrong, but I didn't grow up, obviously, and none of us grew up at the kind of the point that we're at now, where information is so at our fingertips, and where you could look up so much stuff. So I was of the generation that, you know, you'd go to the BFI and sit there with a copy of the knowledge, and if you were really lucky and you had a little bit of dollar, then you would photocopy the pages. If not, like me, you would write them out. And all I knew was I was obsessed with film, and the only thing that I could... I suppose role or profession that I could articulate in any shape or form was director. And the idea, and again, without sort of getting all Oprah about it, I was so obsessed with escapism and being able to go places in my head and to sort of not fabricate stories, but to be able to sort of take yourself out of your own existence and go somewhere else. That and film was sort of the strongest link I could find to that in terms of what you would actually end up doing. So anyway, long story short, well, that's a lot of back babble to go. I sort of really carved out my own luck, as a lot of us do, and it wasn't sort of it wasn't a conventional route in. So I went and did a course at Guildhall that was practical about filmmaking, and then also sort of half about advertising, and then journalism, and a whole bunch of things, which I've got to be honest, I just didn't have a fucking clue. All I knew was I wanted to direct. That was the main thing. And what I knew was that I knew nothing about the process of it. So I used to, even from sort of being 7, 8, used to read those bloody credits.
Mm.
And I was just mesmerised by, you know, what's a gaffer? What's a best boy? What's a director of photography? I had no idea, but I knew I wanted to find out. And my first job was... is it half luck, is it half effort, I don't know, but either way, I met some incredible people and sort of really lucked out. So my first job was at the Boiler House Studios, which was a very small 30x30 film studio in Brixton that was funded by Lambeth Council within a collective of creative businesses. So it was sort of young enterprise. And it was behind the Bon Marché, and it was this incredible body. It was a set builders, like a fashion designers. And in the middle was this bloody boiler house. And these two guys, Clive Howard, who was an art director, and Mikhail Geisler, who was a special effects technician, he'd make big vats of chocolate and stuff. And you know, all those Cadbury's ads, that's, you know, it's him, it's all real chocolate, they're full CG and all that stuff. Or, you know, if a statue needed to cry, he was the one who figured out rigging and, you know, go spend hours in. At the time, it was Henry before Flame, to sort of smudge out, you know, all the little things, the little ducks that he put in. Anyway, and they used to hire, so they had their own job, but they used to hire out the studio. Anyway, long story short, I basically worked for free for them for a long time and just learned. They were sort of 30, I was 20. They were just these masters, 21. they were absolute, they were sweethearts, and they just taught me a huge amount about, one, their own specialisms, but just, I suppose, the world of moving image and filmmaking. And Clive was also the Douglas Brothers art director, which was incredibly fortuitous. Mm. And again, life is about making luck, but it's also about just luck. And they were on the cusp of, from when they were making music videos to making the first commercials. And I knew no one in advertising, so it wasn't about, oh, you know, there's Dave Dye, and there's this and that, and oh, so that's, what, you know, that, oh, he's amazing, da da da. I was purely from the other side of it, sort of from genuinely from behind the camera side of it. And all of those boys were amazing and encouraged, actively encouraged me to pursue my directing. You know, gave me a Super 8 camera, would buy me film stock from the Film Stock Centre on Wardour Street. I'd go out and film stuff. They would look at it, you know, and say, we're just looking at your eye. And it was just the most incredible schooling. And I suppose that the next, my chronology is going to be rubbish in this, but broadly, so basically I started directing very, very, very low budget, like music videos and sort of sketch show pilots for either people that I knew who were comedians, or I did some stuff for, God, was it Fremantle? They were down on Stephen Street. Anyway, and just getting to grips with, on one hand, like a very art directional world, which was more the music videos and kind of telling stories purely through imagery, and then comedy, which is obviously a very written world. And then again, as everything that is fortuitous and luck and da 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 and all the rest of it, I left the studios. I did quite a lot of freelancing, and then I met an old school pal who was working for Fox, Big Bad Fox. And they were launching over in the UK, and I'd never thought about television, so it was like, great, I'm in production, I'm starting to make stuff, I'm loving, you know, directing, it's starting to sort of get some momentum behind it. Sky had been, obviously Sky was out in Austerly, and they were based there. And long story short, had no idea what on earth I was going, I didn't know who I was going to go meet, I didn't know what job I was going for. But anyway, I went and I landed a job at Fox and started directing. It was for a kids' channel. And I started directing, I suppose, their promos, their ads, and also like their a lot of their programs as well, you know, like with their presenters and stuff. Da, da, da. So it was... it was a wonderfully chaotic time, because even though it was Fox, it was the start of something. Mm-hmm. And Fox Kids was established in the States very much, but, you know, what was it going to be in the UK? What was it going to be in Europe? So I suddenly got introduced into broadcast. So I went from production and making and filmmaking to filmmaking, but within a broadcast environment, and then understanding about branding and design and graphics and how does stuff work on screen and, you know, online a little bit, but obviously the balance at that point was still very much linear and not non-linear. But what was brilliant was, I'm not an advocate of being a jack of all trades. I'm an advocate of learning as many things as you possibly can. Certainly not pretending to be the expert in all of them, but it was an incredible playground because we made so much stuff. And it's not, being part of a maker culture, that's a very big difference between sort of broadcast and advertising, is that obviously in broadcast, it's a 24/7 on a very real, that you are creating content for sort of pretty much every second of the day. So your turnaround is, it's not all fast, but there is some stuff that is genuinely in 2 hours, some stuff that you plan for, you know, 2 months' time, some stuff for 6 months' time, some stuff for a year's time, and that covers the full gambit of advertising campaigns across a number of different sort of mediums, and also, branding, what the channel looks like, your continuity, etc., etc. And it's incredibly broad. And I just had the most incredible, I think it was 3 years I was there, and seeing something, you know, working in, I suppose, essentially cable and satellite before cable and satellite really exploded, and it sort of is what it is now. And then someone, it's all, you know, it's always sort of people that you know, and hopefully there's a modicum of talent in there and they remember you, and then, you know, they give you a call. Anyway, I got a call from a friend of mine over at ITV to sort of say, look, do you fancy coming over and doing what you're doing over there, over here? And I've heard of ITV, and that sounds quite interesting. That's a good idea. And also, it was, it's funny, isn't it? In your 20s, you're closer to being a kid, yet you kind of want to run away from it and go and do adult stuff. And then, you know, you become a parent, and then you want to go do kid stuff again. And I was quite keen to sort of try different, you know, you sort of at a certain point where it becomes a bit cyclical. So anyway, new challenge, adult audiences, huge shop window, you know, working on some insane brands, working on an insane brand in itself, but also some incredible program brands, and being able to write against that stuff. Lots of new channels that were being launched, lots and lots and lots of opportunity to direct, with very varying budgets from really high end down to some really sort of nitty gritty stuff that, you know, was really, really fast turnaround. And I loved that stuff that was animation. It was just an, again, as I said, I'm really glad that I had a very, it's high functioning is not the word, it's just a very productive in terms of, you know, we are, I do think as creative people, motivated by making. It's the act of making, you know, as a chef, you want to make food. Mm. You don't just talk about food, you want to make the bloody stuff and you want to taste it. You know, we want to make work and we want to see it and we want to see how it's, see how people react to it and see if it has an impact. Is it profound? Does it make someone laugh? You know, that's the only fucking reason to do any of this, let's be honest, is to achieve something that is either emotional, is, you know, are we informing people? Are we educating people? Are we entertaining people? There's so many different ways that we can kind of push it. And if you do it successfully and it means something to someone, then that's incredible. It's bloody difficult to do.
What year is this, by the way?
What year?
Yeah, what time are we in?
So cruel.
just to give us a little bit of context.
I think that would have been around the 2000, around 2000, maybe the millennium. Yeah, it must be about 2000, 2001, something like that.
Right.
The interesting thing, well, I say interesting, maybe it's just interesting to me. The interesting thing for me was that I had no concept of terrestrial cable satellite networks, etc., etc. I was very much punter vision of like, oh, it's BBC, and then you have these cable channels, and da da da. And ITV was at a really interesting part of its history, where the network had become centralised. So it had been from Granada Central and yeah. You know, NTS Television Southwest, da da da. And then it all came together, and all of that had happened before I got there. So it was a really, it was, you know, a company that was, I don't know, at that point, 36, 37 years old, but it was sort of like a new chapter for it. And it was trying to figure out, okay, well, what's my central proposition now as ITV, as opposed to these collective companies, you know, what do I stand for? What do I look like? All of which was, a lot of it was there historically, but also, you know, new channels launching, ITV2, ITV3, then a few years down the line, ITV4. And then, anyway, so I did about 4 years of that, which was predominantly making and directing and writing. And then on the side, also still doing music videos and stuff like that. I was very much in the making mold. And it was strategic to a point, I would say, but I think my concentration at that point in my career was still very much about creating stuff. And then anyway, again, this part is a sort of a very long story short. Obviously, there's always movement in these in places and organisations. And a very brilliant man who was very important in my career, and also, you know, his guidance and his sort of friendship has been very important to me, is a guy called David Pemsel, came into ITV. And I think his background, I think that was my first real exposure to, even though we had a massive commercial department at ITV, the worlds were quite separate in terms of this was programming and making, and then there was commercial and sort of selling and all the rest of it, and clients over this side. And David's background, well, he was a partner at St. Luke's, and his background had been advertising, and he had it was the opposite, much more advanced than me, but it was the opposite kind of journey, where he'd gone from advertising into broadcasting, and I was sort of going the other way, not the other way, but sort of learning more about advertising. And his model, I think he basically looked at the success and the output of All Creative, and sort of questioned why ITV, a brand the size that it was, and with the, you know, with the sort of love and the affection and the programming and all the content that it had, why we didn't have a kind of an equivalent. So I think very creatively, we called it ITV Creative. Took us, oh, wow.
How do you think of that?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes I'm amazed by how creative. And anyway, he was sort of with a board, you know, the HR board, and a lady called Claire Salmon, who was also there, a brilliant lady who was also at ITV at the time, and very much part of those things, sort of did a very extensive kind of, you know, set of interviewing. Anyway, for whatever reasons, you'd have to ask him, they took a very, very, very massive punt on me, huge punt, to basically set this thing up and run it. Which was a huge step, and you know, when you look back, you sort of think, and it's important because I think it reminds you, hopefully, it reminds you, I think when you've had people put huge amounts of faith in you, I would say probably ahead of time, and taken a punt, hopefully on seeing some potential and stuff, I think it sort of, it becomes a constant reminder to make sure you're doing that also, do you know what I mean, with people that you meet, and you sort of think, well, that's interesting. And not doing that sort of thing of always having to wait, but oh no, I can see that they've proven that. It's like, no, do you think they can do this? And will it be interesting? You know, for Christ's sake, creativity is about surprise and sometimes being blown away by something, sometimes failing, hugely. So thank Christ it wasn't a failure. This would have been a very different conversation. I think we would have been having this conversation. And we rebranded ITV. It was a huge, colossal job, and I don't say this lightly. It was bringing together a lot of stuff internally in terms of kind of a real brand education going on internally, making sure that we sat as a family of channels, as a portfolio of channels. What did it, you know, against each? What was the proposition against each channel? What were the kind of comms that it needed? You know, what was the proposition against program? It was just a real tightening up, and at the same time, that corresponded with. A gentleman called Peter Fincham, who I think is just one of the cleverest and most creative people I've ever met, and also a top bloke to boot, who came in, and I think, God, this sounds a bit grand, and it sure as hell isn't, because what was before was shit or anything, not at all, but I think he kind of, sometimes again, you're just lucky to be at places at a kind of quite an important time, and I think he sort of heralded a bit of a creative renaissance really at ITV, and it really started, I think, picking up again in terms of a confidence and making programs that I think were surprising, you know, obviously broad and mass appeal, but also having the bravery sometimes to get a bit more niche, and just such an incredible respect for the audience, and it was a really brilliant time. We all killed ourselves, to be honest. And then from there, I did a number of things for about a year, where I'd been in, it's obviously only interesting to me because it's my life, but it was an interesting trajectory, particularly from having made so much stuff. And then obviously building something, creating something, you know what I mean, and kind of building a big department. We were a really big department by the time I left, it was sort of about 80 people who were staff, you know, probably about, like, you know, 100, 120 people with freelancers. It was a big department, and, you know, part creative agency, part production company, you know, part branding design agency, all in one. And I think originally M&C were our agency. My wonderful friend Tiger Savage was there, and we worked together. And when I look back on it, it was an odd kind of situation. We would do the on air, and they would do the off air. It's all very odd and very peculiar because you have to make these things work. And we did, I think, through respect and friendships and kind of getting it and just cool people. I love the fact that you're cats there.
Get out of the way, Taylor. Come on.
Like, what is that weird? Hairy, is there something growing out of his ear?
Yeah.
And then similarly with the just brilliant Nick Gill at BBH, and they were our agency for 3 years. And then
he's very friendly. He's
well, are we talking about Nick or the cat?
Both.
Yeah. I love how your cat's trying to suck your paw as we speak. But anyway, so then worked with BBH for 3 years, and as I said, brilliant Nick Gill, Rosie Bardella's was there, David Corbett's, like some amazing people. And we created some brilliant stuff, we created some not so brilliant stuff, but had a brilliant laugh. And then off the back of that, then I worked with, I went back and I did some really interesting consulting stuff actually, where I went client side a little bit. I went and worked with Rupert Howell and Susan Douglas over at Trinity Mirror, worked with Tiger on some sort of personal projects and some private projects. Private, that makes it sound a bit odd. And just, I think, needed a bit of time to get a little bit scared again, do you know what I mean, in terms of like, this is something I haven't done before, this is interesting. And how did I get, and then I got a call to go and speak to Robert, I should say, on this podcast, the delightful Robert Saville, and I met him, and I met the absolutely brilliant Mark Waits, who is just a genius. And obviously, when you get offered the chance to go to somewhere like Mother, I just thought it was such an interesting and sort of brilliant opportunity, to be honest. And I think it takes, if I'm really honest, I think it takes somewhere like Mother and sort of the outlook of Bob and Mark to kind of, you know, they're certainly not conventional in the people that they hire. And I sure as shit wasn't, because I didn't come from I didn't come from a college, an advertising college. I certainly didn't come from, you know, years in agencies. I came from a directing background, and I came from broadcast. But having worked on obviously big brands in a very different way. Anyway, so then I spent 3 years at Mother. And this is, I'm fast forwarding one of this bit now. So 3 years at Mother. I tell you why, it's, I'm boring myself at the
same time. I might go back through. Well, I was wondering about the Mother thing, and then was there a kind of remit of what they brought you in for, or was it to be a straight creative director on certain bits of business? And were there things from your past that they wanted to directly put into what you did at Mother?
I think the great thing about a place like Mother is that, I mean, you're absolutely brought in, I think, with a view to work on a certain piece of business or have a certain remit, but also there's an incredible freedom and fluidity to work across the agency, because the most important thing is ideas and great work. And sometimes that will come out of work that's against existing clients, and a lot of time that will come out of personal initiatives, Mother projects. I mean, when I joined, I walked in. I can't remember whether it was the first time I walked in or whether it was the first week that I walked in, and there were just pictures of fannies.
Oh, that was done by Alex, my friend Alex.
Right, and I remember thinking, yep. I think this is a place that I could. And straight off the back of that, Katie Mackay was working on the Equal Pay campaign. Brilliant stuff with Elle. I think that Christmas, my first Christmas there, was the year of the Russian dolls to, you know, the gay Russian dolls sent to the Kremlin. You know, it was, so when you're in that kind of environment, it's almost like, of course you have, it's almost like you have a day job, but your day job is so much more. Do you know what I mean? Because culture there is just about, it is genuinely about creativity. And hopefully a lot of that is obviously, the majority of that is with your clients and you're pushing that. There's so much opportunity. So to answer your question, no, I definitely was brought in with a remit to look after Boots and number 7, I think, at the time. Or maybe I picked that up later. I think I picked that up later, maybe.
And which year was this?
Oh, Ben, my God, this is amazing. This is like talking to a ghoul recruiter. this was, hold on a minute, 2012, 2013?
Okay, great.
Yeah, 2012, 2013. So hold on, what year are we in now? 2017. So I left there in 2016. And yeah, so I left in 2016 and I came here. Yeah, so yeah, in June last year. There you go, that's taken me up to date.
Is that the whole thing?
That's 20 dates, all right? You're going to test anything else.
Well, now I can go back and say things like, so, I mean, I did a few weeks at freelancing at 4 Creative, and I'm good friends with John Allison and Chris. And the way they go about their thing, or did their thing, you know, having a production company, a client, and an agency all in one space, was that how it was at ITV Creative as well? Did you basically have a very similar model to that?
Yes, it was a very similar model. I think, it's not because of copying or anything like that. It's because of the nature of the business. You have to have that because the volume of work that goes through, I mean, it's very multi-tiered. So if you were to crudely put this kind of into tiers, you'd go, right, well, there's a sort of, and I don't even want to call above the line, below the line, middle, you know, through the line, it's just middle of the line, through the line, I don't think it's relevant to that. So you'd have campaigns that were specifically shot and where you would, you would have print and out of home, some digital work, et cetera, which were kind of like your big brand campaigns. And your big brand campaigns would sit against either the channel brand, so, you know, ITV or ITV2 or ITV3 or ITV4, et cetera, or player or one of the services or one of the products that, you know, ITV, bingo or, you know, whatever the new thing was. So you would have work that would sit around that, which was, I suppose, the closest in terms to sort of traditional advertising as we know it in an agency. But then, you know, we were filling like £300 million worth of airtime every year. So there were about 3,000 campaigns going through the door annually. Wow. Now, that's fucking high. Now, it doesn't mean, by the way, that each one of those is a stellar knockout of
amazingly.
Imagination. And some of that, and a proportion of that, obviously, is, you know, clip-based, is animation, so like trailers, which support kind of a day-to-day schedule. Some are sort of animations, some are big branding projects. You know, if you think about each one of those channels, you know, you have to build the entire branding infrastructure that, not just what's that in terms of the logo, but what's your, it's called like on-screen presentation, what your idents, you know, what are the graphics that come across the screen when, you know, the bloody end credits come along. It's actually really interesting because you again, I'm not an advocate of a jack of all trades, but you really, you hone skills of both visual and also copy, because the two are at play in so much of what you're creating. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because your shop window is predominantly, it's a TV platform. And it's not an interactive TV platform, but it's not just putting a film on there. It's so much more than that. Do you know what I mean? It's the whole experience of how people are viewing this.
Sure.
From, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning all the way through the night. So, yes. So there was agency where the ideas were thought and on different tiers. There was a production company where we had in-house directors, and we'd also obviously work with production companies, all the normal brilliant people, and we had, you know, people from, you know, Chris Palmer to Rupert Sanders, etc., doing campaigns for us also. We had a very big design department, probably about 20, 30 people. Because you can imagine, again, against all that work, when you start thinking about those numbers, we had a massive post-production house in-house and also using lots of places, obviously, in Soho. And then that was expanded once we brought all of the advertising in-house. So that was, I think it would be naive to say that it wasn't, you know, financial reasons weren't part of that. But also I think it was, actually, and I think Ball Creative certainly showed the way that, you know, you can, if you really know your brand and you bring in the right people, you can make incredible work. And it's a bit disjointed, obviously, if you've got, you know, this sort of on-air, off-air thing, different agencies are doing all this stuff. It's tougher to bring it all together. So anyway, so we brought everything in-house, and at the same time, you know, ITV.com, the mobile experience, all of that was being developed, and we would develop that. So we became a kind of a creative agency then for not just the advertising, but then, for example, ITV Studios. So we would do, you know, the Emmerdale title sequence or the Coronation Street title sequence. I mean, see, I love that. I love the fact that every day at 7 o'clock, you switch on, and you go, well, it's on every day. It's fabulous. You know, it's a bloody title sequence. I think that's great. And obviously the branding of the channel. So, it's very similar to Ball Creative. I think, obviously, the main difference is you've got a completely different, you know, channel proposition. You've got some completely different programming. So you're working, the content you're working on, and the slight differences also, you know, of how, in terms of commissioners and stuff and marketing, but that's your internal clients. And I think that's the real, there's a huge, one of the most important things for me within ITV were that my clients were internal clients, and those clients were creative clients. Yeah. So they were, you know, they were commissioners. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting because you're actually, you know, you're having a creative conversation from the off. And obviously you're going to have differences in terms of how a program is positioned or a genre is positioned or how a channel is positioned. But actually the entire conversation has an audience in mind and nothing else.
Cool. I think the thing also that's really unique about your situation is I think a lot of people use advertising as a springboard into a different career, from everyone from Alec Guinness to Salman Rushdie or you know, movie directors or whatever. Going the other way is less usual. So I'm kind of, and I think also this will feed into a sort of second question, that I think there's going to be a lot more crossover between industries going forward. I think that the lines will be blurred and people might go from one to another and one to another, which is something that you've done. So how was it moving from one to another? Was that a smooth transition? Was it a gradual thing? Did you feel any angst about going from one industry into a different one?
I've got to be honest, no, I didn't. And that, I hope that doesn't sound arrogant in any way. It certainly, I don't intend it to be. I just think, oh Christ, it's going to sound like such a woolly kind of Oprah thing to say. I just think ideas are ideas. And when I've had the experience of working with people physically on a crew as a director, so my team have been my, you know, director of photography, my grip, my gaffer, my first AD, my makeup artist, my wardrobe, you know, my post house, my, you know, within the guise of being a director, to then working in broadcast where, you know, I have my designer, I have my writer, I have my editor, or sometimes, you know, I'd edit myself, and my commissioner. So then when you go into, it's just a different set of people with a different specialism. But we're all trying to do the same thing, which is hopefully put our heads above the parapet, tell stories pertaining to whatever the hell that we want to be talking about that actually have some kind of connection with people. So no, I didn't. And what the benefit I feel that I've garnered from it, is that the right term? The benefit for me has been that I don't, unsurprisingly, segment people and kind of box them in and go, right, that's what you do, that's what you do, that's what you do, that's what you do. Mm. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think what becomes quite interesting is when you, and it doesn't mean you always get it right. I think everything is about casting. I mean, if you sort of go back to almost casting a film, you have to get the chemistries right. You have to get the skill sets right. You know, everything has to be kind of working together with so many different skill sets in play. And I think that's the interesting thing within agencies now. And weirdly, I think it's all quite timely, because I think the nature of agencies has changed in terms of their role as well, and what they, what we deliver for clients, and what's needed, and the skill sets that we need are just a lot broader. It just can't be as base as, right, okay, we just need creative teams who do this, who write copy, who are art directors, they write television, they write print. It is about ideas, it is about experience, it is about craft. Of course it's still about making brilliant TV ads, but it's also about making brilliant digital content. But the word, you know, the emphasis, the word has to be brilliant. You know, good is good is good. You know, there's still a lot of shit.
Sure.
So it's hopefully trying to, I suppose, the learning of it, I find, it's not even natural, I find it's sort of necessary, really, is bringing in people with different skill sets to try and get to something a little bit more interesting, maybe.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you're the ultimate example of that, bringing yourself with a different skill set into advertising. And I'm sort of also wondering, because people generally sort of maybe start off in advertising more, they get in, they learn more about it, they learn who the great people are, and they kind of, you know, which agencies are what. And I think there's a huge benefit to coming at that from a non-advertising background, because you don't have the baggage of, oh, well, was Lowe good at that time? Who's this person at BBH? All this kind of stuff. So I think you had that. Do you think that really helped you, having a sort of fresh perspective at a later stage in your career?
I think probably. definitely. And I just think I've been lucky that I definitely probably have had different heroes sort of growing up. And I mean growing up literally, and I mean growing up in terms of my career. And the majority of those came from production in terms of directors and writers. And then in broadcast, I have real heroes equally. As I mentioned, you know, Peter Fincham, you know, Laura Mackey, Sally Haynes, Layla Smith, who are people that I know, but these are absolute fucking stars to me. You know, they were responsible for the creation of, I think, some of the most, you know, we talk about cultural impact so much in advertising. And, you know, when you work for a broadcaster of the size of ITV, the biggest privilege you have is to be in every single person's living room every single day.
Yeah.
And you are wanted in there. That's also a very different, you know, advertising can be rejected a lot of times. People lean into programming. People lean into their broadcasters. They want to be entertained. They want to like what they're watching. It's an incredibly a positive relationship.
Yeah.
So it's kind of all there for you to fuck it up. And it's really... It's really difficult to get, not to get right, but to make it good. But what it does is it really, really focuses you with no pretension, with no nothing, on the audience. Am I getting this right? And it's a very reactive, a very real-time sense of whether something's working. You know, we've all seen it. You look at the press the next day. I mean, you know, you get BARB, obviously, as a metric, but the most, you just have to open up a paper or go online. The next day, a new programme launches. My God, is it slated? Is it loved? Is it, you know, are people ambivalent to it? Not every single thing, but, you know, look at the big cultural, a lot of it's still around great programming. Bake Off, for Christ's sake, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Or The Voice is happening at the moment, or whatever it is, you know, Big Brother still rumbles along somewhere in there. You know, the Kardashians were born out of a fucking show. It's not a dead medium, it's just bullshit. It's just how you consume it is not linear anymore. You know, it is. You know, I watch the majority of my content live, not because it's not programming necessarily. I just don't have. I don't. My life isn't structured around real time. So whether it's catch up, whether I'm finding it, whether I want it bite size, etc., it's just made it a lot more bloody interesting and just a lot more convenient. To be completely honest, I've gone off on a ramble now, Ben.
A good one, though. But that audience thing that you're mentioning, I mean, I think that's really interesting also, because when you begin in advertising, inevitably, as a young creative, you look at awards as something that will give you a leap forward, because it, for better or worse, that's how a lot of people's careers are measured. So you actually go, well, a Creative Circle Bronze is actually more beneficial for my career than a 7% uptick in sales, which is totally messed up, but that's how it is. So I think that maybe... your emphasis on, you know, the audience and who you're communicating to, as opposed to awards. I'm assuming there wasn't an award obsession at ITV Creative. Maybe there was, but it allows you to do what advertising's supposed to do, which is look at the people who are responding to your work.
Yeah, and you're right, and I think you're held. There's a real responsibility and a transparency in broadcast in terms of you are held responsible for it. Not solely, because that would be a bit unfair, but because it's so brutal and because it's so immediate, you can't, whilst awards are a wonderful validation of craft and hard work, even in broadcast, you know, the BAFTAs, you know, if you win a BAFTA or a Rose d'Or or a broadcast award, you know, these are huge fucking accolades, or, you know, an Emmy, and my God, you know, you still, you know, you want to win those things, but your day-to-day in terms of what you are held accountable for is so brutal that you can't almost be distracted by that, because, you know, that won't happen. You will know that that's not going to bloody happen, because you've either got panned or, you know, being celebrated in the lead-up to it. But also you're in this incredibly kind of, well, same with advertising, it's equally as cluttered. It's just a slightly different emphasis. It's a slightly different emphasis. And the interesting thing, actually, you're talking about, you know, is there an advantage to not having, you know, there is an advantage to all ignorance.
Yeah.
I think, because whichever way you're going in, I think, you know, if you have, hopefully, you know, the pursuit of excellence and generosity of spirit and all that kind of stuff, and ultimately the kind of the creation of great work at art, wherever you've come from and wherever you're going to, that will kind of keep you in good stead. I was also incredibly bloody lucky that I mean, I'm quite a chatting bird, so I had a very sort of broad network. So I always had a lot of friends who worked in advertising, and whilst I was either working as a director or working in broadcast, and we kind of, there was a very natural meshing of everything that we did. But also those people that I knew more tightly, I was very, very lucky that they are absolute doyens of advertising and fucking brilliant, but also at their heart, amazing populists. You know, Tiger Savage, who's obviously, her work speaks for her. I don't need to sort of give her any more of a, she's absolutely bloody brilliant, and her work speaks, you know, speaks for itself. But she is a, she is an utter, utter populist. She's brilliant at craft. She has great ideas. She's one of my best friends. You know, I had the luck of working with, as I said, you know, Nick Gill. God, you don't get more down to earth and sort of more generous. I'm not trying to blow hot air up these people. They're just really fucking good people. And I was lucky. So my introduction into advertising wasn't battering. You know what I mean? It was really inclusive. It was it was a partnership. That was a different thing, you know. And then when I went agency side, you know, completely, it was mother. So, you know, there was, for me personally, there couldn't have been a better fit as my first step into advertising, somewhere that wasn't defined on something conventional, something where, a place where, you know, difference is sort of celebrated. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know, I mean, obviously it's hindsight knowledge of it, I don't know if I'd gone to a more conservative agency, would that have been as smooth a transition, you know? God, it makes it sound like I'm transitioning. I don't know. I hopefully it's a combination of a shitload of luck and hopefully one or two smart decisions along the way as well. But the decision to go to mother, you know, was very much, you know, I'm going to learn here, and I'm going to have a great time. I'm going to make great work, but I'm also going to be able to learn from really, really clever people.
Yeah. Talking of more conventional situations, obviously you're at Leo Burnett now, and I'm sure it's not the Leo Burnett of, well, I don't know, it's probably been a lot different Leo Burnett's in the last 20, 30 years. But from the outside, it's not mother. So maybe you want to explain maybe why it is mother, I don't know, or what the similarities are, but also what attracted you to moving to an agency that must be, in a lot of ways, not the same as mother.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, well, personally, I've sort of got, haven't really got an interest in repeating the same thing kind of over, you know, the same experience, I mean, over and over again. Hopefully, well, I don't speak for myself, the times I've been happiest are the times that I'm always constantly learning and evolving. God, that sounds shmushy. Fucking hell. I don't, you know, I don't mean it like that, but it's true. And listen, you know what? That's true. I am happiest when there's a trajectory. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And there's surprise in there and all that kind of stuff. Mother is mother. You know, Wydens is Wydens. Droger is Droger. Adam and Eve are Adam and Eve. And they're all fucking great places. But that's mad. That's like saying, you know, the football club that you support, you know, great, Manchester United are brilliant, but I'm a Tottenham fan and I'm very happy to be at Tottenham. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't come to Leo Burnett to make Leo Burnett mother. Leo Burnett doesn't need to be mother, it's Leo Burnett, and it's got a fucking amazing heritage, and it's got huge strengths, huge strengths. Two things that were really important to me, I met, so in the conversation obviously to come here, the first person I met and who sort of in that conversation I was over the line, you know, within, you know, we were meant to meet for an hour, we ended up talking for six. Was Paul Lawson, who's the CEO here in London and has been for shit. See, he made me so nervous about dates, I've got to try and remember now. I think he's been here for about 12 years, but I think he's been CEO for about 7-8. And first and foremost, his energy and his passion are just utterly infectious. And ultimately, you work with people and for people, so you've got to dig them first and foremost. And I dug him, and if you know, if he was anything to go by, you kind of know you're in a good place. I think secondly, as well, I'd spoken, obviously, you sort of ask around and people who, you know, been through the doors here and stuff. And the resounding thing was sort of a culture of decency and generosity of spirit, and just really fucking good folk, as in. Just integrity, which is really important. You know, I know that's an obvious thing to say, but some places have it more than others. And I'm pleased to say this place has it in abundance. So that worked out. I met Mark Tutsell as well, mm-hmm. Who is a fucking legend, bluntly. And similarly, you know, after a lifetime in advertising, is still as passionate today as I imagine he was the first day that he walked into an agency, and is still utterly motivated 1,000% for making good work, and sort of, you know, at all, you know, and nothing else. And that's really bloody important, and it spreads, and people feel it, you know, and that's ultimately the culture you get. So, and also, it's a different challenge. Also, I'm going to keep using the word also, I've worked on lots of stuff that's kind of, I suppose, smaller and niche, but actually, I suppose if there's a thread that goes through my career, it's working on really big mainstream brands. And I think it is, in my humble opinion, shitload harder to do great work against the mainstream brand because you're appealing to a broader remit than it is to kind of furrow down and go tighter and go more niche and to go smaller. That's not to say that that's easy, not by any means. Everything is equally as hard in different measure, but it's a real bloody skill. And the brands that are here, I think, are brilliant brands, and brands that I'm really interested in working on, you know, brands like McDonald's and Co-op and Kellogg's, you know, brands that I've grown up with and that I walk past my high street. I mean, hilariously, I live just around the corner and literally walk down to the end of my road and there's a McDonald's and there's a Co-op. It's ridiculous. It's the most ridiculous thing ever. It's like, en route to work, I just literally do a nice little walk by of all the clients that we have. So someone needs to smack me over the head with a box of cornflakes and then I'll be fine. But I really enjoy it. And I really enjoy because it's taking those brands and going, you know, to the next level, to the next level, to the next level, to the next level, working on brands that are global and making work that's for global markets, you know, bloody tough. It's not tough in itself. It's tough to make it brilliant, you know what I mean, and to work. So those things were, it's not complicated, you know, people, ambition, you know, do they have the ambition to kind of, you know, we all want to get better, 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 and to make this place, you know, Leo Burnett London, you know, I personally think, you know, the mark of success is when people are knocking the door and kind of want to come in, and the people who are inside sort of don't want to leave, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And awards are fucking fantastic and brilliant, and it's amazing, and of course they're really important for so many reasons, but that's the mark of success for me, is when you almost don't have to recruit, because from whatever field, whatever creative field, you know, funnily enough, I don't think Google or Pixar have a problem finding people.
No.
You know, when you stand for what they stand for, people radiate to it. The best people radiate to it, because without having even, you know, having to say anything, you know, there's opportunity within. And that is the opportunity here, I think. One, from a legacy of some amazing, amazing work, but also kind of, you know, hopefully, you know, building and building upon it.
Yeah, but also, I mean, in terms of the mix of people, I think there aren't really that many women in your kind of position in advertising, I think, kind of sadly enough. And when I'm trying to put this podcast together, I do feel like I have to rename it Middle-Aged White Guys sometimes. So, I mean, it's great that you're not a middle-aged white guy, but do you feel, I mean, the word diversity keeps getting chucked around so much, it's almost becoming meaningless now. And I feel like people just have it as a sort of watchword for something they ought to be doing, as opposed to really thinking it through. And do you have that in the back of your mind? Do you try and create a department that is diverse? Is that something that's important to you?
Yeah. Well, I'll be really honest. So it's been, you know, he talks about the transition from broadcast or from what I've done in the back in my past to advertising. The thing that I found most interesting, most different, is the diversity issue. Mainly because, I've been really, really honest, and listen, I'm by no means fucking saying, I mean, it'd be the most ridiculous thing in the world to say, but, you know, oh, production has perfect diversity. We all know there's a dearth of female directors in comparison to male directors. But if I concentrate on broadcast, I can honestly say the first, whatever, 13, 14, 15 years of my career, I probably was aware of my gender maybe once, and I wasn't aware of my gender on that one occasion because it was actually directed at me. It was actually on a set of something that I was directing, and a crew member was just really fucking inappropriate about an actress who was quite scantily clad and about what he would like to do to her very publicly and very loudly. And I chucked him off the fucking set, unsurprisingly, because he was a dick. Now, bar that one experience where you just go, right, well, you're an idiot, I was so blissfully bloody unaware of it. And not because, as I said, it was perfect, but because I do think broadcast is far more advanced than advertising, which I find quite interesting because, you know, we're an industry... within the advertising industry, we're an industry that is about, you know, being progressive and, you know, cultural changes, et cetera, et cetera. And yet we're really recessive and really backward in a lot of ways. And because it wasn't because of anything that anyone had said, I think this is the difference. And it's interesting what you were saying just then about, you know, there's a lot of conversation about it, you know, what's really changed, et cetera, et cetera. It wasn't that it wasn't the hot topic, because your reality day to day was a fucking mixed reality. So Peter Fincham's, you know, the seven most powerful commissioners in ITV, five of them were women. And not because they were women, but because they were really fucking good at what they did. You know, the director of sport was a guy, the director of news was a guy, brilliant guys that they were too, but nobody was, there wasn't a marking, you know, I doubt for one second, I'm certainly not going to speak for Peter, but yeah, he didn't bring people in because they're a woman or a man, he brought them in because they were brilliant at their jobs and they have brilliant track records. You have incredibly strong women running production companies. You have incredibly strong women making those decisions as commissioners. It's far more balanced. Now, get into the acting thing, you know, if the you know, when you get to wages, is the wage of an actress on a soap opera the same as a man? I have no idea, I've got to be honest. So, of course, there are areas, directing, you know, would you say there are more female producers than male? Probably. I mean, I don't know the minutiae of that, to be honest, because obviously that's not what I saw every single day. So it's not perfect. It's by no means perfect, and I'm not saying that for one second. But it's really interesting to come into advertising pure and pure and really see some... It's not there. It's not fucking there. And again, as I said, I think my introduction into a place like Mother, where there is, you know, I mean, obviously, look at the name, for Christ's sake, where obviously, you know, I was a female, I don't mean for one second, because I was a chick. You know, there were mixed teams, there were male creative directors, there were, you know, female creative directors, female teams, male teams, you know, whatever. It wasn't anyway, it was perfect. I'm not saying that Mother's perfect by any means, but what I mean was, it wasn't, and then I just saw and I started reading about, you know, the numbers, 12% of creative directors in the industry are female, and that's it, you know, and it goes down further when you get to creative teams. And I, to be honest, I was just a bit like, are you fucking joking me? And then you see it, you know, you actually start physically seeing it. So, yeah, it's a fucking problem. And yes, what's the thing you can do about it? I did a talk on Friday for at Creative Equals, which was really interesting. There's some brilliant people talking, far better than me. And my very kind of blunt thing about kind of like how do we change this stuff, because, you know, I got asked, you know, what do you think about quotas and targets and stuff? And the naive answer to that would be, well, not naive, but I suppose the more hopeful answer to that would be, why would you need quotas and targets? People should just do the fucking right thing.
Yeah.
And not because it's a moral thing, but because creativity is based on difference. It's not based on sameness, for fuck's sake. That's down to gender, ethnicity, you know, socioeconomic background. I mean, it's so fucking stupid. I mean, can you imagine anyone saying the opposite? Like, no, actually, I think what's really important is that we're all the same and, yeah, we have the same people talking about love, talking about all the things that are important to us and telling the same stories. It's like, that is just the stupidest thing. And there's no other part in the arts that is so pinpointed. It's just mental. So, we need to do something about it. Of course, we fucking need to do something about it. And also, the only way to do it is just to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, am I, you know, is that something bluntly that I'm looking at? Obviously, I'm bringing people in and all the rest of it here. Is it something I look at? Absolutely. You know, what's the way that you change it? Hire more women. Not because they're women, but because they're bloody brilliant also, but because you're thinking about it. And unfortunately, we're still at a point where we've got to think about it. And the aim should be, hopefully, the moment we don't actually fucking have to think about it. And again, it's just become a normality. I know that's an obvious thing to say, but it's so imbalanced when you look at certain places and certain organisations. Like, this is nuts. You know, how have you got any flex? It's just, Jesus, can you imagine if everything had to go through my filter? Obviously, I'd love to think I'm brilliant at everything, but of course, fucking not. It'd be the dullest thing in the world. Think of all the fucking literature. And I'm starting to swear now. I'm sorry, Ben.
That's fine. I put the little E next to it.
I'm sorry. But it's just so, it's so dumb a conversation to have. It's just not with you, obviously. It's delightful to have with you. You know, I don't know. It's sort of, yeah, I don't even know what the not I don't know what the solution is. I think we just sort of fucking crack on with it.
Yeah, I agree. And what I kind of meant by it sort of becoming meaningless thing, it to me starts to get similar to the word digital, because people just say digital and they don't even know what it means. If you ask if you ask everyone in your department what it was, they'd all come up with different things. But even diversity, you know, we're talking about male female diversity, and there's ethnic diversity, and there's age diversity as well. And the advertising industry is so fucking incredible in a bad way at not looking at any, oh, whoa, what do you mean we've sort of sacked everyone who's over 45? What's the problem with that? And you end up with this dearth of influence that could be incredibly important and useful for all sorts of reasons. But, you know, advertising, I don't know, it feels like it has its own set of rules that people, I don't know, live by in a way that isn't necessarily that healthy for the industry, is what I was going to get.
I think you're right. I don't know. I suppose some things just feel so intuitive. Do you know what I mean? I find it, and I don't mean to sound naive, I just find it very odd, you know what I mean, that they even become discussion points. Things like, you know, is youth important? Of course it fucking is. You know, if we were going to go to broad cliches, the brilliant thing about youth is that it's braver. You know, it has exuberance, it has bounce, it has... It's not that passion is exclusive to youth, because that's bullshit. You know, what does experience bring? An absolute fuck bucket of stuff. You know, the best football teams don't run because they're fielding out a football academy of 17-year-olds. You know, funnily enough, you have John Terry at the heart of your fucking defence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Alongside an 18-year-old. Because actually, two things. One, you're passing on the baton and you're teaching, which is hugely important and kind of goes full circle to what we were talking about right at the very beginning. There isn't enough of that investment, you know, internally within places, I think, where we spend time mentoring people coming up, not so that we can find people 45, but because there should be more reciprocal. I mean, what the fuck? You know, every industry benefits from passing it forward, passing it back, passing it round, you know.
Yeah.
And if we stop knee-jerking and trying to find, you know, thinking that the elixir of whatever is in either youth or in whatever it will be in 2 years' time, and just calm the hell down and listen to our instincts and just be smart about it, there's just a natural thing where I think the balance of gender or ethnicity, people from different backgrounds who have a different approach to idea generation, storytelling, platforms, skill set, craft, creation, all of it is just so imperative. And so, like I said, it's just so, how can you ever argue the opposite? You know what I mean? Or how can you allow the opposite to become a reality where you look around the department and it's all white middle-class dudes? Or not that white middle-class dudes aren't fucking brilliant. They are. It's just anything. You know, listen, I love chicken. I don't want to eat it every day. there you go. That's going to be the name of my album.
That makes perfect sense. As a white middle-class person. But
you want a delicious chicken.
Well, I'm an immigrant over here, so that's fine. I'm ethnic minority and getting towards 45, so I'm going to be a very rare unicorn pretty soon if I still work in
advertising. It's going to become like that thing. Do you remember Logan's Run? That film?
Yeah.
Michael York, Jenny Agutter, and everyone's going to have this little red thing on their palm, right? Only for people within our industry, and I will smack it red the minute that everyone hits 45.
That is what's going to happen. We're all going to die. Yeah. So I. I've had over an hour of your very valuable time, and I think we've gone through a lot of very interesting things that I wanted to cover. So thanks very much, Chaka. And
hey, it was such a joy to sort of Skype meet you, genuinely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, listen, thanks for doing this, not because I'm on it, just because actually you've talked to some really interesting people. I hope I'm a shadow of those folk. But yeah, thank you. I'm very flattered as well. So thanks, mate.
Well, I think you're, like I've been saying a couple of times in this thing, your story is unique, and I think that's what's going to be really valuable for anyone listening. And like I said, thanks very much, and I think it's brilliant.
All right, darling. Okay. God bless.
Thank you.
See you later. Enjoy the sun.
I will. Thanks. Bye. Bye.